Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today we sit down with Cape and Islands District Attorney Robert Gallibois, now in his second year of his four-year term. Welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you very much for the invite. Good to see you too.
Also with us is Kelly Quayle. She's the Community Engagement Officer at the DA's office. Welcome,
Kelly.
Thank
you for having me.
All right, so let's start with the role of the DA in office. I mean, people know you prosecute crime, but it's a little bit more than that.
We definitely do prosecute crime, but we're also trying to delve into the community to help prevent crime. The ultimate goal or responsibility of the district attorney, of course, is to promote public safety, and there are different ways to get there. Certainly your traditional role in the courtroom. But we also go into the community to try to work with many different stakeholders to try to prevent any sort of crime rising anywhere in the district.
Mm-hmm. You're not in the courtroom anymore, are you?
I wish, Mindy,
I was
please.
Say, do you miss
it's
it?
A bone of contention. It really is in our office. I feel for my staff because every once in a while I get a little twitchy and want to go in there. But my role is different now. It's to be in the community and play more of an administrative role in the office.
Right. All right. So the last time we had you on the program, about a year ago, DA's office was creating a DEI committee.
Yes.
What's the status of the committee and how is it engaging with the community?
So it was launched with our initial chairperson being Falmouth's own, Anjali Scott Price, who at the time I was on the select board here, and I want to say congratulations. She's a fairly new mom.
Yeah. So with a beautiful baby.
Beautiful baby. Yeah. My understanding, I believe they met four or five times since I was last here before with you, and I think what their goal is to try to help our office through recruitment purposes to in all levels of the office and all staffing positions, as well as training. So it's been getting back to me what their recommendations are, and we're trying to work with their suggestions in terms of training. They've come up with some really good ideas, and we're trying to figure out how we can make it work within the work schedule that we have for so many different positions.
Yeah. So that was one of the things you were campaigning on, was also diversifying the DA's office. And I think there are so many businesses here who would like to do the same.
Yes.
And it's really difficult, not so much just in the training, but just the community. You know, you can have a wonderfully, you know, inclusive and embracive workplace, but how do we extend that into the community? That's the tough part, right?
It is. And one way that we've tried to do that is through the promotion of internships. And we work with, again, various stakeholders to try to encourage younger people, be it from high school, Mindy, or college, certainly law school, to come in and see what it's like to work in a prosecutor's office so they can start making those connections early on. And it's working, admittedly slowly, but it is beginning to work.
Uh-huh. All right, so let's talk about some of your new initiatives. The DA and Us. This
yes.
is what, community forums for people to bring issues and concerns to the DA's office?
It is. I can say with great confidence, Mindy, while I was running for this position, there were two subject matters that resonated wherever I went. The first had to do with mental health. And I do want to mention this briefly. I'll get back to community engagement. But so the mental health court, just to remind your listeners, we talked about at the time that this was the only area of the state that didn't have a specialty court known as a mental health court. And in a mental health court, professionals in the field come right into the courtroom. They work with a struggling defendant to identify what's the core issue that this person's struggling with. And as we all know, when you can make that identification, you can treat it and therefore reduce recidivism, making us all safer. I must acknowledge Judge John Julian from the Barnstable District Court. He launched a mental health court, I believe it was September of last year, and Judge Tara Wright is the presiding justice. The docket is growing organically. We were asked to appoint a mental health prosecutor. When I asked the staff, a woman quickly raised her hand. Her name is Shauna Suve. Shauna has a bachelor's degree in psychology. She also is from a law enforcement family within Barnstable, so she has that background as well. And my understanding, it's running very smoothly. So I wanted to put that out there. That was one of the two topics.
Yeah, and I want to just follow up on that for a second.
Sure.
Because that's great, but getting treatment is tough. I mean, we all know. I mean, you got months and months to wait. How are you incorporating getting these folks identified, but then getting them the treatment that they might need?
So the trial court is doing a fantastic job putting together vendors to work with these defendants, if you will, that are in that particular session. There is a screening process, as you might imagine, when an attorney identifies a client as a potential good person for that specialty court. They go through a screening process. I know there are either weekly or biweekly meetings to determine who would be a good candidate for this mental health. And then once they're in that session, to your point, there are vendors available that work with the probation department and the courts to provide the necessary services.
Yeah, that's good news. All right, so back to the community forums.
Yes. So the second topic that absolutely resonated wherever I went was the need for the district attorney to have a deeper community engagement throughout the district. And you might remember I spoke about creating a brand new position called the community engagement officer. And that person's exclusive responsibility was to be in our communities every single day and then report back to me what's going on so we can keep our finger on the pulse. And I think this is a beautiful segue to introduce
Kelly.
Hi,
so how long have you been on the job, Kelly?
I have actually been working for the DA's office now for 14 years. So I worked under the previous administration and now under Rob. But I had always worked in administrative duties. So I was in Superior Court, I was in District Court, and then I moved over to Community Programs when this opportunity arose. I was actually on the hiring committee, if you will, interviewing people for this very position. And one of the questions that stood out on the interview process was, how do you think that the DA's office is perceived by the rest of the community? And no one could answer that question. Mm-hmm. They really didn't know. And I think I had a pretty good idea that it wasn't wonderful, right? That people kind of generally think of us as, we want to put you in jail. We want to
not transparent. Not,
right. We're, right. Exactly. All of those things that kind of come along with it. So I think being aware of those things and then wanting to actively change those things, I said to Rob one day, I said, what do you think if I just tried? And he was like, you know what? I think that's a great idea. So
what is it you do?
So, well, it's what we are trying to do is start a program called the DA&S, and it's a town-based model. So what we're trying, there's 23 towns between the islands, the Cape and Islands, all of which have individual issues, problems, people, community, that are all different from the one right next to them even. So what we wanted to do was set up that I would have these meetings, these town-based meetings in each town, each of the 23 towns, based and made up of volunteers and people who want to be actively letting me know what's happening in the community, in their specific community. The way that we would like to do it is that we would go in and have, you know, 6 to 12 people would be ideal, or 12 to 15 people, more the merrier, that wanted to meet with me quarterly and kind of help me keep a pulse on what's going on in that part of the community so that I can go back to the district attorney and say, hey, we're lacking here, here, and here. But then I also have told Mr. District Attorney as well, that what has to happen from that is then we have to provide change so that people then want to continue coming to these meetings and see it come to fruition, right? So we've been to 4 towns so far, and it's been great. I think it's interesting because when people come to me, they ask me certain questions that have nothing to do with the DA's office just because they purely don't know that we don't handle those things. So that's good too. We're clearing up
issues. Know where to send them.
Right, exactly. Clearing up issues. But then I think what's really unique about the DA's office being out in the community is we do have the ability to bring resources to places. So why wouldn't we take that opportunity if we have it? Yeah.
So in the 4 towns that you've met in so far, are you finding that the concerns, you said they're different. So I'm sure the big ones like substance abuse and, you know, crime, but even within a town, I think village to village can be different, right?
It really can be. It absolutely can. I mean, Barnstable's meeting is actually this coming Wednesday. So that Barnstable's is going to make up the most amount of villages, right, that probably differentiate between each other. So that will be very interesting to see how, you know, how Marston's Mills differs from Centerville
Cotuit, right?
Those will be in the towns that I've been in so far. So we've been in Wellfleet and Orleans and Sandwich. They're a little bit, they don't have those necessarily the villages within them, but the people have had very different, you know, I had a few people that sat with me and said that they live in an elderly community. So they were talking about fraud amongst the elderly, you know, and that they see that things are handed out in mailboxes, you know, mass mailings for, unfortunately, the elderly then call or, you know, give them their personal information and they end up in a really bad situation. I've had other people in the same community, you know, they live in a different area in the same town, but they see that opioids are a big problem in their, you know, in their condo complex or in their apartment complex or wherever it may be. So there are definitely varying issues within each town in itself, but I think there's going to be some that are unique to some towns and not to others, I would assume.
So she brings you these issues, and you have to prioritize, right?
I do.
All right, so how do you do that?
It can be a challenge because, obviously, we have certain limited resources, but she does identify things that we have a staff meeting, and we talk about saying how can we address it. And one thing she just touched upon was, you know, a lot of fraud going on with the elderly. That's somewhat, honestly, of a consistent theme. Us being here in Cape Cod, as you well know, Mindy, we have the highest percentage of elderly or senior citizens, if you will, than anywhere else in the Commonwealth. So it is a challenge, but it allows me to start trying to tailor how I want to design my budget and make certain requests of our Cape delegation and the powers of be in Boston. And that's starting to take shape. Now that we've been here for about 18 months, now that we're starting to build certain relationships with our Cape delegation and beyond, we're starting to try to figure out a path on how to address the priorities that are being identified through Kelly's efforts.
Let's just take that elder fraud for a second, because that is huge and that's happening everywhere.
Yes.
So do you then maybe go to senior centers and try to educate, on what to be out looking for? What do you do?
Another
Kelly?
Great segue for coming up in 2 days. Go for it, Kelly.
Precisely. So we then, we're trying to take information from all of those different places and then be the bridge that connects it, right? So we went out and had a meeting with Elder Services and learned from them that they get over 200 referrals a month of elder abuse, which, I mean, the Cape is unique. We have a very large elderly population, so it's obviously something that we have to target. But people who don't know about those services, or that the Outer Cape now has those services, or then how the referral process works, that's what we're bringing to them, hopefully, is, hi, you have this problem where you see that this is happening here. Here's who you need to contact. I'm going to contact them ahead of time and let them know that you're coming. Let them know that this is a problem. And then hopefully work from there with them on how to get you services. Yeah. So it's kind of trying to bridge the gap where people wouldn't know where to look, and we're just trying to give them the right direction or bring it to them.
Because even with elder abuse, you have elder neglect on top of that, which is huge.
Right.
And you look at some of the wait lists that for somebody wants for, in-home care and things like that, which, again, are so expensive. Elder Services does a great job providing
that.
But as you said, the need is huge.
The need is huge. And I think the opioid crisis also ties into that, because a lot of our elderly, unfortunately, their caretakers are their children or younger family members who may have an opioid issue, or who may actually, because of that opioid issue, be the ones who are abusing the elder or neglecting the elder. But that elder feels like, I can't call anybody because I'm going to lose my home. I'm going to lose my caretaker. So we want those people, or people who know of those people, to come to these meetings and say, this person is between a rock and a hard place. What would you suggest?
Yeah, how can we help?
How can we help them? Or how can we then say to Elder Services, hey, this area is really suffering.
Yeah.
Is there a way that we can, we have the resources at our fingertips. So why wouldn't we try to bring those to people who, especially in the elderly population, maybe not being as savvy on the internet, maybe not having, knowing that you can just hop on Google and find what you need.
Right.
So hopefully trying to facilitate that as well. But in all facets, not just the elderly, mental health issues. And it's terrible that we live in a place where there's no mental health beds for anyone under the age of 18. That's
terrible.
That's a terrible situation,
866-999-4626 is our number if you have a question or comment this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're sitting down this morning with Cape and Islands District Attorney Rob Galbois and Kelly Quayle. She is the Community Engagements Officer at the DA's office. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's talk about some of the big issues that I'm sure you're coming across. We just talked about elder abuse and fraud. What about addiction, overdose? I'm sure that's on everybody's minds. The fentanyl situation is just crazy.
It is. It's gotten to the point with the fentanyl, Mindy, that we don't really see much heroin anymore.
There's no heroin anymore.
All fentanyl. And one thing we started doing from jump when I came in January 2023 was when someone's charged with trafficking in fentanyl, those are your business people. That's the level of they're doing this for their income. We started moving for what's called a dangerousness hearing. That was not going on before my administration came in. And because I practiced before this job over the bridge, I got to see what the other DA's offices were doing. And they were doing this, Mindy. Whenever someone was charged with trafficking fentanyl, they'd move for dangerousness to hold that person from the very outset and not let them get back into the community after being charged. Fortunately, our requests are generally being accepted by the court. Of course, it's up to the judge to determine whether to hold someone as a danger or not, but they're doing that. So where we're feeling a little hopeful is that now that I've been in office for a little over a year, about 18 months, we've gotten to see numbers from 2023. And you may have heard from the Kelly Research Institute, overdoses are down about 10%, non-fatal overdoses. Fatal overdoses are down 7%. So we're hoping that there's a little bit of a correlation between the way we're treating these business people that in fentanyl, so to speak, and the fact that there appears to be a little bit of a reduction right now in overdoses.
Yeah. I'll say we had a roundtable of police chiefs a couple of weeks ago, and Chief Lorraine Falmouth basically said, to the traffickers, we're coming to get you. So there's right. also this big emphasis from law enforcement to really focus on the traffickers as well.
And he's spot on accurate because, as everyone knows, it rips apart families, it rips apart communities, and we're trying to pour all the resources we can to combat it.
Yeah. All right. Hate speech. We hate to think of it's happening here, but it is. We've seen some incidents locally, anti-Semitic, racist, you know, hate speech. What are you doing in that front?
So we created a human rights unit. It's led by a prosecutor. Her name is Courtney Scalisi. Courtney came to us, Mindy, with a little bit of a unique background. She was a prosecutor in New York City for a while. And then get this, she was a prosecutor in Guam.
Wow.
And then she was a prosecutor in Anne Arundel County, which is just outside of Baltimore. In all three DA's offices, she was handling, you know, major felonies. The reason for all that movement, her husband's in the Coast Guard. She's originally from Massachusetts, and now they're coming back to Massachusetts. So she is our human rights, or leading our human rights effort. And you are exactly right. We've had a lot of high-profile cases since I've taken office. And, you know, just to touch upon some of them, we had an incident down at a pond in Chatham where a boy was almost drowned. Mm-hmm. We had a case recently out of Mashpee where there was drawings on the exterior walls of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe Language Reclamation Office. Just again recently, yesterday in Mashpee, a town official received some really inappropriate, if not criminal, we're working on this, emails. So it's becoming, unfortunately, more prevalent. It is definitely a priority of mine that I want to discuss with our CAPE delegation and the powers that be in Boston to try to fund positions so that we can try to supplement the great efforts being made by law enforcement's partners to combat the growth of hate incidents.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's becoming more prevalent, either one of you? Is it social media?
I think it's more casual now for kids. I don't think that they fully... We actually have put together at the office a working group, we're calling it, for hate incidents in schools, specifically, because we figure that's where it starts, right, is with our youth. And what we're working on right now is putting together a survey to kind of ask kids, where is it coming from? Where is it starting? Where is the starting point? Is it in school bathrooms, in the hallways, social media. I think things have just become a lot more casual, and I think we've blurred a line between freedom of speech and hate speech. Mm-hmm. And I think what kids don't understand and what people sometimes don't understand is what hate speech is when it causes damage, right? Or it causes a reaction to someone that is damaging.
Yeah.
And it's happening more and more now, and I think it's also because we see it more and more, and it's at kids' fingertips. They have access to it.
Yeah,
all the time, unfortunately.
One of the things I was shocked, and this is several years ago now, is in one of the high schools, they're talking about restraining orders and keeping kids apart. I'm like, wait, kids in high school have restraining orders?
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. And harassment orders
and
now and things.
Yeah.
And to Kelly's point, too, the community really is reacting in a positive way to address this. Mm-hmm. We've had many meetings with our focus group, so to speak, with outfits like Falmouth No Place for Hate, Barnesville No Place for Hate, MLK Action Group down in the Outer Cape. So there is a really good response from what we can see to try to address it. But again, we do want to try to supplement the efforts being made by these community groups as well as our law enforcement mm-hmm. partners.
And these community forums, Kelly, I was just thinking when you said this sort of smaller groups, are these like neighborhood watch people? Or, I mean, anybody could sign up for these, right?
Anybody could sign up for them. Actually, I mean, and no offense to our wonderful law enforcement partners and all of those wonderful people, I actually don't want people who are on the front lines and see it all, that who are trained in that. I want everyday regular citizens. citizens who are interested in their community, people who want to help and change, because they're going to give me a different perspective.
Yeah.
I already know the law enforcement perspective just from being in the office every day, right? Mm-hmm. I need to see the people that are actually living in the community every day, dealing with it.
And I'm sure you probably get some who come in and say, okay, I know this probably isn't a big deal.
Yep.
You know, the you know, there's a lot of, you know, issues that are much bigger deal, but in my neighborhood.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. And then they don't even realize that they're not the only ones dealing with it, which I think is important too. And that kind of sheds a light, you know, somebody comes in with one of those problems and they feel like it's, you know, maybe not so, but then they hear, oh, well, my neighbor's dealing with that. Oh, and that person down the street is dealing with that. Maybe there is something that could be done about this, and it's not as, you know, small of a deal as I'm making it, or as big, depending on how you're feeling. Yeah.
Another issue that is really huge, and a lot of people don't realize how big it is, human trafficking.
Yes. Yeah. So I have to acknowledge, when I was first coming into office, HT or human trafficking really was not on the radar screen. And shortly after coming into office, there's an entity known as Cape Cod PATH, People Against Trafficking Humans. And I was invited to an event. This is like the second week on the job in Hyannis. It was a random Tuesday night. And the presenter was a survivor. Her name is Jasmine Grace. So I go to this presentation. I walk in, Mindy. There's about 25 people in the room, one gentleman. And the gentleman was dressed in a dark blue uniform, strapping man, wound up being the chief of police for Orleans PD, Scott McDonald. So we listened to Jasmine Grace's presentation, amazingly compelling. Day or two later, I ring up Chief McDonald, go down to his office just to ask him, why were you there? And he explained that his goal was to set up an HT task force for law enforcement to get every department to commit someone to investigating and prosecuting HT cases. I was inspired. This just, like I said, was not on my radar. So I go back to the office and I talk to some staffers like, what can we do? So we put together our own HT task force civilian just to try to promote awareness. And they started meeting quarterly and they were coming up with really good ideas. But as you well know, we're a prosecuting office, so we have to, like, you know, try to do investigations. Got with the Cape delegation, want to recognize our Senators Moran and Sear. They got us some extra funding. And what we did was we went to the Attorney General's office. There was a woman named Vanessa Madge who was prosecuting cases all across the state, convinced her to leave the bright city, bright lights of the big city, rather, come down here and launch our prosecution unit. One of the first things she does is she gets with Danielle Whitney, our director of community programs. They fill out an application for a grant. Every single year, the Mass DA's Association offered this grant opportunity. The ceiling was $100,000. The pot was $1 million. 11 DAs would compete. Mm-hmm. This office had never competed before. And they fill out the application. We're told the pot's cut from $1 million to $450,000. So now we're competing against 10 other DA's offices for $450,000. Two or three weeks later, we get notice. We got $97,000. What do we do with the money? We gave $50,000 to an outfit called My Life, My Choice. They work with adolescent and teen survivors of HT, and $10,000 to Independence House, who work with the adult survivors. We then use the rest for training, both for our staff and law enforcement partners. Since then, and I'll wrap this up. I know we are limited on time.
No, you can talk. Okay.
we continued our tour. Just to promote awareness. And what we did was we created a hotline number and a QR code. And we start going around to outfits like Cape Cod Regional Transit Authority. I want to give a shout out to Tom Cahare over there, who's extremely receptive to this. Mm-hmm. President John Cox over at the Community College, the YMCA, Children and Family Services, Paul Neswicki over at the Chamber of Commerce. So many entities are embracing our push to promote awareness that pretty soon you're going to start seeing this QR code, this magnet that we just received 1,000 of, on the back of bathroom stalls, on the back of taxi cabs, on the back of the CCRTA buses, things of that sort, just to push it out there that there are resources available. The data shows that it takes 6 attempts for a woman to try to get out of that particular life. The more we put it out into the community, hopefully we can bring that number down.
Yeah.
So I'm very receptive.
When we're talking about human trafficking, you know, we're thinking of, you know, sex, but it's also labor.
It is also labor. And as we know, we're pretty much, we're not exclusively a seasonal economy down here. I definitely need to recognize that. But we are a seasonal economy to an extent. And because of that, there are certain exposures that are out there that people could be at risk for being trafficked for labor purposes. And we are also working on that angle as well.
Yeah. How big is the issue here?
I would say it's no bigger than where it is everywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's just for whatever reason, including my own, there wasn't a lot of attention on it for a long time. But now that we've started doing some research on the issue, it is here. And what was really one of the compelling pieces from Jasmine Grace's story was that she went to Bunker Hill Community College to get her associate's degree while she was being trafficked. And her reasoning was like, my trafficker will never be able to take that away from me. And she said, I grew up suburbia, just north of Boston. People would not necessarily know that I was, you know, being trafficked at the time. And it really opened our eyes listening to her story. And it got us starting looking around and seeing certain things within our own community.
Yeah. You can't always tell, right?
Correct.
And I think for a lot of those that are being trafficked, that fear and intimidation that they're experiencing is what keeps them from coming forward and reporting it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. It actually has come up in a community forum that someone had asked because they saw Rob's initiatives about human trafficking. And they said to me, I think their perception of human trafficking was, you know, people in chains or in cages.
Mm-hmm,
it's,
right.
You know, there's so many misconceptions about it that it really could be people just that are living amongst you every day.
Right.
You have no idea how.
Right. Yeah. And again, we have teenagers who are stuck in the system that you wouldn't know. You know, maybe sometimes it's a foster kid who's recruiting other kids and you know, you think they're just out, you know, having a good time when exactly it's that's not the case at all.
Right.
All right. We got an email from Stephen in Chatham who says, with July 4th coming up, there'll be plenty of events at which people will use their phones to take pictures and videos. But is it illegal under Massachusetts law if one person tells me to stop?
If they're out in public?
Yeah.
Well, you need consent to record someone. But if they're out in public, then it opens up.
Like a still photo.
Yeah, still photo. If you're out in public, I believe the way the law is situated right now, if you're out in public, you're subject to being photographed. But I can't give legal advice, unfortunately, Steve, over the airwaves.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So how is the DA's office working with partners on all of these issues? You talked about resources, Kelly. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, there are a lot. There are a lot. Well, part of that is just, I mean, we really have done a tour of going out to all of these different stakeholders and people that have been involved in the process all along, and maybe nobody has shed light on the fact that they even exist. We find out from all different avenues about different resources. We have like a community support funds where people apply to get certain funds from the DA's office that then help their, you know, whatever, their nonprofit, however that may be. So we learned about them that way. Like, we just learned about the Cordial Eye, which is down in Hyannis. Shout out to those people who are fabulous and working on art therapy for, you know, for people who have been through traumatic situations or for people who have experienced any sort of trauma or hardships in their lives. And that's a beautiful thing that maybe people wouldn't know about, but that's something I could say, oh, hey.
Did they reach out to you?
They did. The Cordial Eye reached out to our office, and they are fabulous. They are, you know, they're kind of up and coming and, you know, really working on having a whole other outlet for people to work on their issues. And we wouldn't know that unless they had, you know, applied for community support funds. And then we went and met them. And so now that's something that I could bring to the Barnstable meeting if someone was saying, hey, I'm looking for. So it's all about that. It's really just making those connections between people. And then once we have all of those, then saying, oh, you know what? I have that. It's kind of like making a Rolodex, right, in a certain way. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then you go back and you know what would be perfect for you would be A, B, and C.
Right.
So it's kind of, I mean, we're learning as we go. I think we've never really been a part of the community the way that we are now. So as we go and we, you know, gain more partners and more partners and more partners, which is hopefully that's the goal, then we can use those resources to then divvy out to all the different people.
And you talked about prioritizing and then looking at your budget. I'm imagining there's never enough money to cover everything you'd like to do.
Right. Your listeners might remember, Mindy, we talked a little bit about this when I was on your show about a year ago. When I came into office, we learned something a little startling. That was the Northwest DA's office, which their big city is Northampton. They have a budget that's just about 60% larger than our budget.
60%
in terms of dollars. We're now looking at $3.4 million gap between their office in our office. And why do I highlight that? Our annual population pretty much mirrors their annual population. So in other words, we're the same size. So you can imagine out there, they're able to provide a level of services to their constituents that I'm unable to provide in my area. Where's some things that we're looking to try to address? Of course, hate incidents. I would like to be able to hire some staffers to work. As Kelly mentioned, we're focusing right now in the schools. So if we can get some folks to work with school personnel, because they're doing everything they can, but they could certainly use some additional resources. Fraud, as we touched upon earlier, we'd like to hire some forensic examiners in our office to work with our law enforcement partners, looking to maybe hire retired CPAs that could assist in analyzing certain fraud cases. We'd like to get some licensed social workers in the office as well to work with our law enforcement partners. So we do have some specific things in mind. But again, it comes down to the dollars.
So how do you make that fair? You look and you go, okay, they're getting 60% more money than we are. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody you can go, hey, wait a minute, can we get a fairer budget? I mean, how do you I guess appeal? Who do you appeal to? What do you do to try to make that fair?
So the CAPE delegation is certainly well versed at this point of my positions and my identifying this issue, and now it's getting heard. I'm confident of that in Boston with the powers that be as well. So we're building those relationships that those that ultimately make the determination of what our budget's going to look like. And that extends, of course, from the governor's office mm-hmm. to the various Senate offices to various House offices. So as I'm building some time now in the office, we're starting to build those relationships, focus in on this particular issue, and hopefully over some time we'll meet with some success.
Right. Amy asks, how do you handle issues of human trafficking if immigration status is a factor?
Well, again, immigration status is exclusively a federal matter, and I'm on the state side of the house. We would certainly try to encourage folks to reach out to us through our hotline, and we will try to work with them. When it comes to human trafficking, our focus is twofold. We want to try to help the survivor get out of that life. That is primarily goal number one. And then if we can, we certainly want to try to build a case against the trafficker or the offender. So those are the two goals that we're looking at from the district attorney's office. Their immigration status, again, that's a federal matter. We can try to work with some of our federal law partners, and we certainly would be willing to do that.
All right. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with the Cape and Islands District Attorney, Rob Gallibois, this morning. Also with us is Kelly Quayle. She's the Community Engagement Officer at the DA's office. We welcome your questions or comments, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I know people are really concerned about crime, and especially, I think, when we see some of the connected to, substance use, people, wanting to pay for their mm-hmm. substances, and that's a concern. What is the situation with crime? I mean, how violent crime? Do we have much violent crime here? Is it mostly, breaking and entering? What are we looking at?
I think we're very fortunate that we don't have a lot of major crime here on the Cape and the Islands. We're very fortunate in that regard. And I want to just kind of briefly touch upon a couple specialty court sessions that I think help reduce crime and address, the real issue, so to speak. One, of course, is the Recovery Court, which has been in existence, formerly known as Drug Court, for a while. We have one in Barnstable, and Judge Edmonds in Falmouth has been running one now for a couple years over the Falmouth District Court, and she's doing a great job. We launched a new recovery court on Martha's Vineyard over in mm-hmm. Egerton. I want to give a shout out to Judge Barnes, the presiding justice over there, because we saw a need on Martha's Vineyard. But again, it came down to resources, whether or not the vendors were available for those that would be in the recovery court to work with those particular defendants. And it turns out the answer to that was yes. We were able to launch a recovery court through Judge Barnes's efforts, I believe, in February of this year. So we're pretty excited about that. Pushing it a little further, something we haven't launched yet, and I hope to, is a veterans court. As we all know, Mindy, when veterans get ensnarled in the criminal justice system, they bring their own unique background into the courtroom. And to remind your listeners, what's a veterans court look like? They're allowed to bring in any veterans from the local community that want to volunteer, if you will, to try to work with that struggling veteran, again, to identify what's going on here. And there's more of a likelihood that a veteran is going to open up, if you will, with another veteran.
Right.
So those exist, again, throughout various pockets throughout the Commonwealth. We don't have one here yet in the Cape and Islands. We've had some conversations with the VA, very encouraging conversations, and I'm looking forward to working with the trial court to try to launch one here in our district.
What about Nantucket?
Nantucket, we just came back from a great meeting on HT. We are going around trying to do these training sessions, again, to promote awareness. And there is a law enforcement piece. And I want to give a shout out to Chief Casper, Jody Casper. She's the new chief over in Nantucket, as well as some officials from the hospital, Nantucket Cottage Hospital. They hosted us for a training event. I'd say close to 30 people showed up. Outfits like the Inquirer and Mirror and Nantucket Current, they shared this upcoming training on their own initiative. So that was very encouraging. So we've been over there to meet with various stakeholders, including certain family resource centers, again, to try to push how we're trying to prevent crime from happening in the beginning. But we were especially happy to see the reception when it came to human trafficking.
Right.
If I could just touch on that too, and just in our initiatives, and what we're trying to do is we're also trying to start a homeless court, which would potentially, so we have so many outdated default warrants, if you will. I always use the example, like we have people that maybe have a larceny charge from Bradley's back in 95, and that they are no longer looking for that restitution. So actually there's already a program that's in Boston with the Pine Street shelter that they started, and we've been in contact with them and gone through trainings with them and spoken to them about starting it here and then getting involved with CPCS, which is our public defenders unit on the Cape in Massachusetts. So what it would do is it would, if somebody who is involved in the shelter at St. Joseph's or at the Duffy, who is also Duffy Health Center is also helping us, that if there was someone there that said, hey, you know, I think I have these things on my record that are nonviolent, you know, they are very outdated, but it's a hardship for me to get to back and forth to court. It's a hardship. I'm never going to have the $500 court costs that they need, but it's stopping me from getting my housing. It's stopping me from getting my my SNAP benefits or whatever it may be. We would want those people to then, we would take their stuff. CPCS would vet it, so they would have a defense attorney vet it. It wouldn't be us.
Right.
They would then present to us something that we would agree to what's called a favorable disposition. So that's not going to have you come for another court date. It's going to be something like a dismissal of your case based on the fact that it's old, it's outdated, there's nothing coming from it. And removing those warrants, number one, helps the police so that they don't have to do those warrant sweeps. It helps the court because then they're cleaning out the docket.
Yeah.
And it helps that person who is just held up by, you know,
by something very minor. Very
minor. So we really feel like that would be so beneficial to so many people. But we also say to that, the sheriff's office and all of our friends who are wonderful over there wouldn't be present at that hearing because we don't want anyone to feel as though they're risking being locked up. So we don't even have anyone with handcuffs available.
I love the idea of the Veterans Court, and I think you're so right because I think for a lot of veterans, it's like you can't understand what I've gone through unless you've gone through it as well. So, and it's such a, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, such a difficult thing to deal with, and especially now coming into this time of year, 4th of July, which is, you know, all the not just the fireworks, the town fireworks, but people, you know, doing their own. It's like,
It's a lot
to handle, You mentioned before you became district attorney when you were working off Cape and you learned these different things that are happening. What are we learning or can we learn from other communities in the Commonwealth with similar issues? What are you looking at that you think we could incorporate here, you know, should you have the resources?
Exactly, the resource. I can give you a specific. This was about 6 months or so ago. Wake up one morning, have the morning coffee and start going through the news, going through the Boston Globe, and I see how a colleague, Kevin Hayden, the DA up in Suffolk County, was launching a youth advisory council in one of his school districts up there. So I was like, huh, maybe we could do something like that. And I got with Danielle Whitney, our director of community programs, and Katie Green, who works with her. And we launched a pilot program, a youth advisory council pilot program down in Nauset. And basically we have, I think it's five juniors that get together and they discuss kind of the issues of the moment. And that has progressed now where coming into next year, since they were all juniors, they'll be returning. We're having conversations about, listen, and I think they still use this word, I might be dating myself, but school assembly. I think they still do some school assemblies.
So. I think that's still a thing.
So the goal next year is for them to identify whatever the topic is of the moment. And we've learned we don't want to tell them what they want to discuss. Mm-hmm. Let them tell us what is important to them. So they're going to make that identification September, October. And then the hope is to have a school assembly in November where they're going to lead a discussion, this panel of five that will be seniors, with their classmates. And now it was so successful, we're going to try to now pivot and expand this youth advisory council to another school district. Monomoy, looking at you.
Wow.
So, yes,
that's great.
We're pretty excited about
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. Do the DAs meet? I mean, are your chiefs of police meet, you know, the state, they have the... Do DAs meet and talk about things that are happening and how they're dealing, or no?
Tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock.
You do?
Bullfinch Place, if you want to come up.
So tell us about those meetings. What are they like, and what are you learning?
We do have monthly meetings. It is kind of interesting because even though we all have the same position being district attorney, as you might imagine, we all have our little uniqueness as to what's going on in our various pocket of the Commonwealth. So it is good to hear, as I just mentioned to you, what I learned from Kevin Hayden's office, albeit I read that in the newspaper article. But we do get to hear what other districts are doing and trying to see, or we might plant a seed that, hey, that might work in my district. So it definitely has a value.
Yeah. All right. So it's you're going almost on year two now. And going into this, I'm sure you had an idea of what it was going to be like to be the DA. What have been the surprises? And like human trafficking, that was a surprise, right? You didn't know that was an issue. So what has been the surprises? What surprised you most, and what's been the biggest challenge?
I think one of the challenges I think that a lot of employers face here in the Cape is workforce. And we have, I believe the number is kind of staggering. I believe it's about 50% of the workforce comes over the bridges every single morning, according to the chamber. And we're seeing that in our office. We're not at 50%, but I would say, you know, 20, 25%, maybe somewhere in that range, including our prosecutors. So to me, that one of the bigger challenges is the workforce element. Other than that, I was really fortunate, Mindy. I was in the courtrooms across Massachusetts and including the Cape for about 25, 26 years before I got this job. I started practicing down here as a prosecutor somewhere in the mid-90s. So I was quite familiar with the courtroom aspect. Admittedly, I had to learn a little bit more, of course, about administration. Mm-hmm. I had never run a DA's office before, but we put together a great team of people. Right at the top, we got seasoned prosecutors that were working previously in other DA's offices that knew how a DA's office should run, came down, and I would have to tip my cap to them. I think they're doing a great job, Jess Alumba and Tara Coppola in particular. Mm-hmm. And I need to do a shout out. We recently hired a woman, Alyssa Goldhaber. She worked in Suffolk DA's office for about 15, 16 years at the highest levels. And she had a Cape connection, and she was looking to move on, and she came down. She's our new deputy second assistant. She has a wealth of experiences investigating child victim cases. And again, she brings that perspective, having worked in Boston for a long time, and she's sharing with us what seems to work.
Looking back on your experience as a defense attorney, does that help you in the job you have now? I know you started, you were a prosecutor and a defense attorney. Does that experience help you with the job that you have now?
I think it does. From time to time, a prosecutor will pop in to ask me certain questions on whatever case that they're working on, to try to get a defense perspective.
What will defense do?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there are some occasions where if they think maybe the defendant might testify, mm-hmm. A lot of prosecutors, just because of the nature of the work, don't have a lot of cross-examination experience. So that was the bulk of my practice for 20 years as representing defendants. So it's kind of interesting that they'll pop in every once in a while just to pick my brain a little bit. And I like it, honestly.
Yeah. All right, Kelly, I'm going to ask you the same question. Like, you worked in administration there for a long time, and now you've got this new job. So surprises and challenges.
Oh, I got to be careful. I'm sitting across from my
be
boss.
Nice. Be nice, please.
Yeah, you know what? I would say I worked under the previous administration, which obviously was very different than the current one. I always thought I would work in administration. I kind of had planned to just do that forever. But that's, I think, because we didn't have as much of an emphasis on community outreach in that under that previous administration. So knowing and then having that surprise of that Rob would want to do something like that, it definitely turned the table for me. I never even considered being a part. Like, there's always been two little aspects in the office, fiscal and community programs. And I was like, those are two that I'm never going to touch. I think I kind of like it over here in the criminal world.
Yeah.
But I love that the community program aspect has preventative as well as restorative aspects to it. Mm-hmm. I think it just really aligns a lot more with what my ideals with, I think, generally the public's ideals, right? That now we really need to focus on. Everything is not black and white.
People, transparency.
Right. And then what I talk to Rob a lot about is transparency versus vulnerability as well. Like, in us being transparent and us trying to help and us trying to do all of these things, right? But at the same time, still trying to maintain the fact that we are the DA's office. So, I mean, it definitely is a challenge, but I would say it's been a pleasant surprise. I really like what I'm doing now versus.
One thing that I was looking back at some of the things you campaigned on. The one thing we didn't talk about is you talked about collecting data on equity surrounding prosecutions and punishments. So where are we at with that?
So we're trying. One frustration is the database that the district attorney's office used. It's called Damien. It's been in existence, Mindy, I think from 2002 or 2003. Hasn't been updated. So what's really frustrating is it doesn't have the certain feels that we're looking for to enter data. And we're trying to get creative. Whatever might be identified as street address number 2, we're trying to now plug certain information into that to see if we can try to collect data. And again, we have several different offices, so we have to make sure everyone's using the same language and using the same field. There is a push going on right now by the district attorneys collectively across the state to try to update our database or the service that we have. So all the DA's offices would like to be able to collect better data, so therefore we can go back and scrutinize our efforts. So it's a work in progress. This was a little bit of a roadblock I didn't foresee coming into office, but we're trying to address it.
All right. So just kind of going back to the community forums, Kelly, because there may be some folks who weren't listening early on. You've done 4 towns. You've got a ways to go. People might be going, really? I'd like to give my input.
We have Bourne tonight at 6:15 at the Jonathan Bourne Library. If you'd like to be a part of that, we have Barnstable Town Meeting tomorrow at 5:30 at our office. We'll be on the Vineyard on Thursday as well in West Tisbury. So we are making our ways all around. If you do, I have my email. You can reach out to me via email. It's kelly.quayle@mass.gov. If you want to be a part of it, if you wanted to call the main office and reach me there, that's totally fine. I'm extension 222.
Room 222, right?
Yeah.
That old TV show.
I have to put out there, I'm sorry, we're very excited about this. About 2 weeks ago, we launched a website. We didn't have a website before.
Okay.
CapeandIslandsDA.gov.
All right.
CapeandIslandsDA.gov.
We'll put a link on our website.
Thank you so much. It's been described as a forward-facing. You can interact. You can sign up for emails and text messages. Technology is amazing.
And you can find me on there, too.
Yes, you can find Kelly if you want to volunteer.
And if you're in a town that's already had their meeting, you still want to hear from people.
Absolutely.
People
we're going to be meeting quarterly. This is going to be an ongoing effort. The more the merrier. If people want to join now, later, whenever, we're happy to have you. And so it's going to be continuing.
Shout out to Woods Hole's Catherine Bumpus, who helped launch that website.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, great. All right. Kelly Quayle is the community engagement officer at the DA's office and Cape and Islands District Attorney Rob Gallibois. Thanks for coming in and filling us in on what you're up to. Appreciate it.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you for the invite.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.